Welcome to the Anthro to UX podcast, where you will learn how to break into UX with an anthropology degree. Through conversations with leading anthropologists working in user experience, you will learn firsthand how others made the transition, what they learned along the way, and what they would do differently. We will be discussing what it means to do UX research from a practical perspective and what you need to do to prepare a resume and portfolio. I'm your host, Matt Arts, a business anthropologist specializing in design anthropology and working at the intersection of product management, user experience, and business strategy. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Anthro to UX podcast. I'm Matt Arts. I'm here today with Sonia Hodgson, who is a UX researcher at LexisNexis. Sonia, why don't you tell us a little bit first about your, you know, your journey into anthropology, and of course, we'll make our way to UX.
Yeah. So I, for starters, I didn't set out to study anthropology originally in my undergrad. I started undeclared and took a couple of anthropology classes, as a lot of undergraduates do, and really, really found it to be beneficial, even immediately, in terms of understanding my own habits and things that I do, and better being more in tune and understanding with the world around me and what other people were doing. So I, you know, studied anthropology and linguistics, always been very interested in languages and the linguistic aspect of things. Soon after graduating, I got a job as a Spanish language medical interpreter. And started working in healthcare. Loved that job, and found that my undergraduate degree in anthropology really was a foundational tool for navigating that environment and for better being a liaison and a cultural broker. But it was actually an interaction I had working as an interpreter that led me to seek a master's in applied anthropology. Just briefly, I had this encounter where there was a Chuuk-speaking woman from the Guatemalan Highlands who came in for a prenatal visit to a clinic. And, you know, it was difficult for the healthcare staff to understand that she didn't speak much Spanish. She had never gone to school where she would have learned formal Spanish instruction, and her village didn't speak Spanish besides being a trade language. And, you know, there was a lot of breakdown. You know, they couldn't process some of her information because she didn't remember her birthday, and that was considered a red flag. And so there were all these things that started happening that made me realize that there wasn't a framework set up within this capitalist business model of healthcare to be able to spare extra energy and compassion, and not only that, but the time and energy required. And so it made me question so much about systems. It made me question so much about the way the way that our societies are not only built and function, but what is informing that? What is not just the culture behind it, but what are the power struggles that are behind it? What are the structural components of that? And so all those curiosities led me to seek a master's in applied anthropology. And through that degree, I, you know, originally thought I wanted to be in medical anthropology, as you know, from my background, that made a lot of sense. But through my program, I got introduced to program evaluation, and I found that so fascinating. And I found the application in real time of the methods, the anthropological methods, and using different computer programs and stakeholder management and all of these things that were just so fascinating to me, to have real time results that I can share with stakeholders where they can make and actuate business decisions. That was just so fascinating to me. And that was, so that was originally what I did after I graduated with my applied anthropology degree, was program evaluation. Of course, the pandemic caused a lot of issues with jobs and job stability for so many people, myself included. So that led to a transition into market research, which is closer to UX. It's getting closer and approaching the user experience research angle of things. However, there was definitely a lot of sales involved in market research that just did not, it didn't satisfy my desires in terms of, again, asking those major questions of not only power dynamics and struggles, but how are the assumptions that we make as, you know, developers and business people impacting end users. And so, yeah, I got introduced to user experience research through that job in market research in a couple of different projects. And really just, I have just loved and thrived in user experience research in my job at LexisNexis, and have just found the ability to have, honestly, tremendous impact in the tools that the legal research tools that lawyers and legal librarians are using to shape the world in which we live in, shape our laws, and bring justice where needed. So it's been a very fun ride to get here.
Great. And so, you know, just to go back to your applied program, was it formally an applied program?
Mm-hmm. It was, yeah. So I was studying at Cal State Long Beach. They have an applied anthropology master's.
So, you know, I know you explained why you chose that. You know, but that is, it's less common, of course, in the U.S. to have applied programs. And so I'm just wondering, at that time, what was the program focusing on? Were they thinking about tech?
Great question. The program in and of itself was not as specifically focused on tech. However, there was a course that was foundational to my career that I took. It was optional. I don't know why it was optional, but on computer-based research methods. And so I got to learn how to use SPSS, how to use deduce, how to use Excel and do survey methods on Qualtrics. All things that I'm using now in my career as a user experience researcher. But it isn't, you're absolutely right. It's not something that is very common to have an applied program. And even within that applied program, you know, there were a lot of nuances that came up, especially regarding technology and nuanced studies in areas of tech that hadn't been, you know, broached before, at least in the literature.
Great. And so coming back to market research, now I appreciate it and sort of satisfy your need, especially with the sales component, but was there anything, you know, did market research also help you sort of bring anything forward? You know, was there anything in that space that is helpful that maybe somebody would want to consider, especially in a market where it's a little tougher to get UX jobs right now?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't want to dock market research in and of itself. It's more the particular position that I was in, the particular company was very consultancy based, and working with a lot of Fortune 500 companies. And so because of that, there was a lot more of that kind of aggressive salesy, component that was a necessity of the way that the company was structured. And it's just something that I've, you know, personally, sales doesn't really, it doesn't strike me. I'm also not good at it. As it happens, I have trouble selling people on things I don't recommend to them. So, you know, with market research, though, I loved the ability to do ethnography all the time. That was something that, even though it's in small little increments, doing ethnography on communities that I had never thought of looking into, never had any interest in studying before, but this particular client needed to understand their user base better in order to make a product that would address pain points.
So tell us a little bit about LexisNexis. I know you said, you know, legal, but many people have probably heard that word, that company, maybe in libraries, but can you just give us a little bit about who they are?
Yeah. So LexisNexis, a lot of folks might know them from doing research at libraries, or I've heard people tell me, oh yeah, I used that in school. LexisNexis is a company that has a breadth of different areas that they delve into. It's a technologies company. So a lot of what we are putting together is like search engines and different programs and tools for professionals. There's a risk management side of things. There's a more business angle of things just for professional tools in general. I personally work on the legal research platforms. So I liken the product that I work on to the Google Scholar for lawyers, more robust than that, but at the same rate, in the sense that you are the end user would be actively looking for court cases, statutes, you know, how to write a particular motion for this particular judge to get this motion passed. How to make an argument for this particular type of scenario, or understanding how an expert witness has testified before. Have they been more plaintiff-oriented? Have they been more defendant-oriented? All questions that seem like minutia, but they make such a huge difference for the end user in the terms of building their case for litigation, for helping them to craft, you know, solid contracts for transactional law, being able to research tribal law. It's a really robust tool. And recently, I've been working on the generative AI aspect of that. There's a new program, Lexis Plus AI, and this program is dedicated to all of the things I just mentioned about conducting legal research, but also how to generate drafts and for, say, a supposed audience, a supposed tone that they want to take, incorporating summaries from case law or other sources within our database and summarizing those, as well as being able to even upload their own documents for summarization, adding into drafts that they're generating, getting more information from those documents by asking questions of the generative AI model. So it's really pretty exciting technology, and it has the potential to save our end users a lot of time in the work that they do. A lot of the lawyers that we talk to are very busy people and need every ounce of technological help and you know, backing that they can get in order to have a truly reliable case or matter built. So I hope I didn't use too many technical words. I'm used to speaking legal speak these days, which was totally new to me when I first started. I learned all of this on the job.
Well, yeah, so speak to that a little bit more, right? Because that's, you know, of course, one of the strengths of anthropologists to learn the language. And in your case, you didn't just have to learn legal, but also, you know, UX and product to a degree. So tell us a little bit about, now, you know, you move from market research, you're at LexisNexis in this UX role. You know, what was that transition like for you, and what tips might you have for others?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So honestly, one of the things that I tell people who ask me, you know, what do I have to do to become a UX researcher, is that as an anthropologist, you already have all of the tools that you will need. I liken, you know, learning UX terminology as just that, learning new language, like a new language that you're learning in the field, basically considering your workplace a field site, and branching into UX as, you know, the beginnings of doing that desk research and understanding the field site before going into it. So a lot of the terminology is just different ways of saying what we already say in anthropology, as well as, you know, a lot of the methods that may be a lot newer or different from the methods that a lot of anthropologists practice are just more methods. So they're not super divergent from the toolkit that an anthropologist, a trained anthropologist, would already be coming with. It's just accessories, basically, to the foundational toolkit of anthropology. So an example of this is, before being in user experience research, I had never conducted a card sort. I didn't know what a card sort was, but upon reading up on it, it was very clear to me, this is just another method for getting at a certain type of information. And that's really the best piece of advice that I can give to anybody is, don't be intimidated by, you know, the new language, the different notions. User experience research is such a vast field in terms of the backgrounds that user experience researchers are coming from. I work with anthropologists, I work with psychologists, I even work with there's a neuroscientist, psychologist, anthropologists, and statisticians. There's such a breadth of knowledge that people are coming with, and that can be intimidating in the sense that, you know, oh my gosh, they have so much more knowledge in this area than I do. However, the reality is they're coming with different knowledge that will be complementary to your knowledge. And a lot of anthropologists are very strong in qualitative methods. This is something that is a particular skill set of mine as well, and that has been tremendously valuable to my organization, knowing that I am strong in qualitative methods, which is, I think, a selling point for a lot of anthropologists, having the particular skill set that they come to the table with.
You know, I'm definitely with you on, we have the skills, but you also did just mention AI. And of course, we participated together, you know, in an AI panel at the Society for Applied Anthropology that you led. And thanks again for putting that together. Now, that's the kind of skill that, you know, most anthropologists are not going to come out of school with, have the ability to learn, but it's also one that's a little bit more abstract. So, you know, I'd be curious to know what your experience has been getting into that, how you approach it, what you're learning, et cetera.
Absolutely. That is one of the things, is that I think after getting my degree and even as being a UX researcher, you know, the world's steady changing, and there are so many technological changes at any given moment. And what's new or what's being developed, there's constantly going to be opportunity for learning. And a lot of that I had to, a lot of it was done quite anthropologically, I'd say, in the sense that I pinpointed folks that I knew who were savvy, with, you know, either doing work through artificial intelligence or who had a good knowledge base of artificial intelligence, and asked them a bunch of questions, just really listened to them, understood, did a lot of desk research, took a lot of, there's so many ample free courses available in terms of just explaining AI for dummies, and giving a foundational concept and then building upon that, in terms of not only what it is, could be, is not, but also the different applications.
And so aside from, you know, working on building AI-based products, have you also had the opportunity to bring it into your own research?
Yeah, so this has been something that's been fairly new to me within the past year or so. I've been using generative AI tools in the work that I do, and it's been tremendously helpful. One of the tools that we use is called Tetra, and Tetra Insights, and there is a AI bot on that that is helpful. You can upload your code book, you upload your study guide and all your questions, and then upload your interviews and at the video audio interview recordings, and it will code based on all of the back end work that I had to do. Obviously, there's a lot, like any method, computer-based method that an anthropologist will do, there is a lot of back-end setup and just thinking through how will the program interpret this. This is something that I guess I, you know, a lot of the large language model stuff is very new to me. However, even before the explosion of generative AI products being very commonplace for research, I was using NVivo 12 to autocode ginormous lists of data when I was working at in program evaluation, and had hundreds of responses to work through and didn't have time to code every single one. But if I built a synonym list of every possible word that I could think of that matched this code, and then run it through the system and just go and fact check it, basically, in terms of double checking its work, that saved hours of time. And that's basically what LLMs, large language models, generative AI, and any AI-based program can do for researchers, is just save a tremendous amount of time.
You know, you spoke a little bit about, you know, how you studied, how you've, you know, done some work to be prepared for working in AI and UX. Also talked a little bit now about using AI. You know, obviously there's a lot of interest in that right now, but, you know, that also, there are always other opportunities, you know, that don't need to focus on AI. And so as somebody who's new to the field, you know, what else have you maybe brought in from elsewhere? Is there, you know, any other skills that you're working on developing that you realize that you need to sort of augment your degree with?
Mm-hmm. I have, yes, I have heard pushback from qualitative minds, that folks who are really good at qualitative research, that they don't particularly want to become statisticians, and I hear them and I fully understand them. I highly recommend it, though. Not becoming a statistician necessarily, but learning statistics and learning enough statistics to where you can run a survey, conduct statistical significance testing, be able to run a linear regression. And obviously, again, that's one of the bonuses of working on a team of researchers with different skill sets, is being able to rely on their expertise, but also having enough knowledge to where I can do some of my own work in that. You know, currently, I mentioned using SPSS. That's a new program or skill that I had to learn. And felt pretty dumb using it at the beginning. But just continuing to meet with mentors in the area, or in the field that knew SPSS well, meeting with experts on Excel who just taught me things that I had never encountered before in the program, that tremendously impacted my research and built a strong career for me. And even in my qualitative skills, doing content analysis with survey, open-ended survey data. So I highly recommend, just even if not using large language models, having some understanding of statistics and maybe investing in a statistics package or two, vis-a-vis SPSS, Excel, or even R. R is a coding language, and yes, we'll take some learning curve, but it's a free package, and once one learns enough about it, I had to pick up a book and just read from a book at the library. But learning enough about it, there's a lot that can be done. And even, I think just even talking as a anthropologist in business, it's something that continuing to build one's skills is vital to sustainability as an employee. That's not negotiable for me. I have to show that I'm continuing to learn and grow as a researcher. So it's a ripe opportunity for me, honestly. The options are endless in terms of what that could look like.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, I would throw for anybody who's a Mac user, Wizard is a super easy statistical package that will do, you know, the basics that you need to do, and it has a nice interface. As opposed to SPSS, which has less of a nice interface. But also I'd throw Python into that list. You know, very valuable as well. But so yeah, that's all great. Thanks for suggesting those. Now, you know, some of those could dovetail into my next question here, which is the market is really tough for UX roles right now. And obviously, you know, you've broken in a period where it is still, it has been challenging, right? You broke in kind of after that point. So any thoughts on what somebody can do if they're just starting out and want to get involved?
Yeah. Well, I can't solve market crunch issues. So that much is challenging. But in terms of preparing oneself, you know, I've had people ask me, do I need to get a certification in user experience research? And my short answer to that is no. It could be really valuable, but those can be very expensive. And especially if times are tough and, you know, one isn't able to find a sustainable job to be able to pay for that. My biggest recommendation is springing a couple $100 for a membership to Interaction Design Foundation, IDXF, or is it, no, IXDF. And this is it's an organization and a massive library catalog of UX courses, master classes, even a community. You can find a local UX research community and meet in person or online. So it's something that I highly recommend if somebody is really trying to get invested. Networking always goes a long way, even in a challenging environment. But you can earn, as I have on even during the course of my job at LexisNexis, I have taken several courses through Interaction Design Foundation and gotten certificates for those, all as a part of my membership. And yes, it's a couple $100, but it's much cheaper than other boot camps that can run in the thousands of dollars. So they can be pretty prohibitive, especially during tough times.
Yeah, it's actually something I recommend to people as well. You know, with the flat fee and all that courseware there, you know, it's as much as you want to put into it. Okay, so if anybody wanted to find you, where would be a good place to get in touch?
Well, I am available on LinkedIn/S. Hodgson Anthropologist. Tried to make it as easy as possible there, all one word. But LinkedIn, and then I have a research gate.
All right. Well, Sonia, thanks for coming on the podcast. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you all for listening to the Anthro to UX podcast. To learn everything you need to break into UX, visit anthrotoux.com. There you will find all the podcast episodes and career coaching resources. Please like, share, and subscribe. See you next time.